Welcome back, Financial Issues. I'm Dan Celia. It's great to be here. By the way, the indices are on positive territory, but not a lot of movement. Everything's kind of hovering around that flat line. We've seen it, you know, it's up about an eighth, maybe a quarter, but most of the indices in positive territory. The NASDAQ is, I don't even know if we can call it negative. I mean, it's down 0.07, so not even a 16th, about a 32nd. Of a percent, so it's barely down. It's just around the flat line. It's been there all day, by the way. Hasn't budged yet. It's been there for the last couple of hours. Nothing is really moving out of the trading range that it's in right now. You know, the Dow, nobody's really talked about this, but the Dow stayed managed with some of the volatility that we've seen over the last 8 trading days. I mean, the Dow has managed to stay above 2,600. 26,000. It went over 26,000 a couple of weeks ago, and it stayed there. It really hasn't moved. So it's nice to see. In all honesty, if it never moved, if it stayed right here for the rest of the year, if we closed on December, and the Dow was 26,192 where it is right now, that would be great. So it's kind of nice. The markets are muted. Not a lot of trading, not a lot of volume, not a lot of movement, and all that's very, very good. The real good news in the markets right now that you would not know by looking at it, but it ought to be. So I'm a little suspect of the news because of that. But U.S. and China agree to establish a trade deal enforcement offices. So the U.S. and China are going to have a trade deal. That's what they're working on now, a trade deal enforcement offices in plural. It's plural. So one would expect that they're going to have an office here in the U.S. and an office in China, and they're going to man those offices, I suspect, together, and they're going to have some sort of enforcement kind of arrangement. I think it's really going to be more of not necessarily enforcement, because they're going to go about the business assuming that it's going to happen like the deal says. But if something gets out of line on either side, then they will be called into a level of accountability. So that news came out from the Treasury Secretary's office yesterday. And so the immediate reaction, at least by me, and I'm sure by some others, that this was going to have some real positive impact on the markets today. But it didn't. It hasn't yet anyway. And I think one of the reasons why I know I was going back to all the news that I had already been in a couple of hours before I saw this morning, going back to Europe and Asia papers. So, you know, I go to the Financial Times, and I went to the Wall Street Asia edition and Wall Street Journal Asia edition and a couple other newsprint medias, and scouring the news to see if there were some comments and optimism or positive comments coming out of Asia. And there was no mention of it. So I'm sure I am not the only one that was a little suspect about this. So did we really have an agreement on this agreement? Or did we talk about the prospects of having this enforcement office or offices? And Mnuchin or the rest of the Department of the Secretaries of State's office, are they just running with this? I don't know. And there hasn't been anything. There hasn't been anything else out about that since. So we don't know. So we'll just watch patiently, closely. 844-707-5533. Well, oil prices are moving, so that's good. And they're continuing to move down. West Texas Intermediate is at 64.03 right now. So they're down now about 1%. Oil's down very close to 1%. 64.03 is when it hits 1%. If it does, it'll be below 64, and we'll be back with something with a 63 handle. That would be great. Brent crude oil sitting at 71.21. That's down 0.75%. So we'll see that. It sure would be nice to see $60, 60 handle again on crude oil. That would be wonderful if that were to happen. I'd love to see us hit summer driving season, with gasoline prices a little bit lower, even if they're just a tiny bit lower, but a little bit lower than where we are right now. That would be good. I really am concerned. Don't want to see $3 a gallon heading into the summer driving season. We don't have to. We can fix it. But I think it's going to take some intervention from the government, or primarily from the Trump administration, which I talked about earlier, asking the president earlier that, Mr. President, don't go to Saudi Arabia anymore and ask them to increase production so that we can have better oil prices. We don't need Saudi Arabia to do that. I'm tired of being subservient to Saudi Arabia and OPEC. We've been dealing with it for 50 years. We're finally over it. We're out of it. And let's use this as opportunity that is before us. The opportunity is their oil's going up in price. They're trying to drive it up. Our oil, let's bring it down in price so we have cheap gasoline. But more importantly than that for the oil companies is we will help them gain market share around the world, because I can guarantee you that we are going to do a much better job selling our nat gas and oil to Eastern Europe, to China, to Japan, to other places around the world, or sell our distilled products to those places when Brent crude oil is at $80 a barrel. And in that case, we ought to be wishing and hoping that it goes to $80 a barrel. Now, we're going to have to move fast, because we're not going to have that opportunity to gain market share for a very long time, because you can guarantee one thing: OPEC will start ramping up production in a heartbeat if they see that happening. But you know what? Let them do it. Then we have the scenario of we still have lower gas prices, plenty of oil in the global market, ready for expansion. So either way, it's a win-win situation. And I just would say to the president, we're not going to get too many opportunities to have a win-win situation. If we do this, we win. If we don't do that, or if we do this and they do this, we win. I mean, it's a win no matter how you look at it. It's good for American companies. It's going to be good for American refineries. And, you know, we ought to do that. Maybe we even pick up market share in the largest refinery in the country when Aramco starts buying more crude oil from us. Who knows? It could happen, and that would help. I mean, there's so much opportunity here, but the answer is not looking for this immediate quick fix by begging Saudi Arabia to increase their production. Stop doing it. We don't need it. We don't need to do that. We have it right here. So have a luncheon, have a dinner, have just a meeting at the White House with CEO and senior executive management from the major and mid-size oil companies of America, of the refineries, of the liquefied natural gas, the LNG companies, the nat gas companies. Get them all in a room and say, okay, we're going to go to work for America. We're going to help you. We're going to help American people, and we're going to keep this economy. Welcome back. Financial Issues. I'm Dan Celia, 844-707-5533, 844-707-5533. It's great to be here. We are going to go to phones. We have lines open, 844-707-5533, 844-707-5533. If you want to queue your call, your question up, you can do that, 844-707-5533. Markets aren't moving. The NASDAQ has turned around. That was down about a half of 1%. It's now up half of 1%. So we're seeing a 1% swing in technology stocks. It just doesn't seem like there's any letting up. And I have recently in the last, this week, so Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, accounting this morning very early, am starting to formulate a little bit of opinion, I guess, on, no, it's not. It's really just reinforcing something that I talked about 3 years ago. And I first talked about it on a conference call. I never talked much about it on the air. I'm not sure why, but I haven't. And maybe it's a little too complicated. I talk about it at town hall meetings, and I'll do that again at future town hall meetings. But, you know, I'm reformulating some of the opinions that I've had about some of the things, why we're seeing the markets. And I thought it was necessary for me to dig a little bit deeper into some of the positions that I've taken that I talked about on Monday on the air. And I was talking about a meeting that I had, or I was invited to a board that I was talking to, and what I said about the growth of the economy and the growth of the markets, and got me thinking, and I started to take a second look at that. And I left one thing out when I was talking about it, and we're starting to see so much right now, and we've got to always remember, and I know that if we listen to American media, we would never think this, but if we go to other countries and look at the media there, we would come to this conclusion that we are the place everybody wants to put their money. You know, we have people here that want to put their money in Swiss banks. Everybody everywhere else wants their money here. We are the country of trust. We're the country of trust. And what I mean by that is our dollar is the most trustworthy currency in the world. It's why I've always been a strong proponent of a strong dollar. It's why 5 years ago, I was talking about the Federal Reserve must start raising interest rates. And you remember me talking about it. People would call and say, why do you say that? You know, that's going to mean interest rates are going to go higher. Yes, it would. But it needed to happen, and it did happen. And later than I wanted it to, I would have rather seen it more gradual, starting a little bit sooner. But nonetheless, we have raised interest rates. Every time we raise interest rates a little bit, we get a stronger dollar. And that is a good thing. When the dollar is strong, think of it in terms that it helps stabilize prices. If I have a strong dollar, that dollar becomes more valuable. And when it becomes more valuable, I can buy more wheat with my dollar, more oil with my dollar, more corn with my dollar, more beef with my dollar. My dollar is more valuable. Thereby, I can have purchasing power that is a bit stronger. And you can say, and all the analysts and all the economists can talk about the perils all they want to strong dollar. But in the long run, based on the things that I've just said, why it's so important to have a strong dollar, that strong dollar trumps everything. That strong dollar is far more important than anything else. And everybody around the world gets a picture of that except for us, because we have mainstream media that only paints picture of negativity, or at least only in the last 2.5 years. And I can say during the Obama administration, they weren't as negative about so many other things, but they also weren't negative about the an administration that all they wanted to do was demonize prosperity and profits. And they did a very good job of it, I might add. So we're in a very good environment from that perspective. So look, I look at what is happening in Saudi Arabia, and I talked about this yesterday, but I'll piggyback off it. Saudi Arabia puts out a bond issue for the first time, Aramco, I'll say. That's the oil, the kingdom's oil company, which is the most profitable company in the world, and the largest refinery here in America is owned by Aramco. They decided they're going to issue some debt for $10 billion. It quickly went to $85 billion, and this morning it was up to $100 billion. We don't know what they're going to issue, but I don't suspect it's going to be $100 billion. So a lot of the people that are clamoring for that debt issue, they're not going to get any. In other words, it's a bond. It's a corporate bond that people want to buy the bonds. That's what I mean by saying $100 billion. They wanted to raise $10 billion. In other words, we want people to lend us $10 billion, and we're going to pay them an interest rate. That's what it means by issuing bonds. And they end up getting people that want to lend them $100 billion. Instead of $10 billion. So they're clamoring for something that gives the appearance of stability or a strong bond or a strong currency that is a place to park their money. And America is number one in that. The second largest economy, some would say strongest, I wouldn't. But the second largest economy in the world next to us, China, owns a $1 trillion of our debt. So why would they own our debt? Why would, because it's trustworthy, it's stable. That's why. 844-707-5533. Let me go to Cheryl. Cheryl's calling us from Virginia. Hey, Cheryl.
Hi, how are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you.
Well, I've got a couple questions. I am retired military. Mm-hmm. So my military pay that I bring home net is about $1,600 a month.
Mm-hmm.
My VA rating was recently increased to 100%, so that's about $3,300 a month.
Mm-hmm.
I was also disabled according to Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
That's about $2,500 a month. And the federal government just approved my disability application.
Okay.
Which is about $2,200 a month.
Okay.
So I have $2,550,000 in my TSP. $225,000 in an old 401k with a previous company, and I have $55,000 roughly ballpark in an NFCU IRA account, and I also have about $45,000 in savings. My question is, do I consolidate my TSP and my 401k? My 401k is with Fidelity. Do I consolidate all of those together into one account?
Yes. Those three accounts,
okay.
That IRA, the old 401k, and the TSP, they should be consolidated.
Okay. And then right now I'm invested in my 401k into growth.
Okay.
But I'm going to need the money in the future. So do I switch that over to stable and earnings, or I have yet to become a partner. I plan on doing that this afternoon.
When you say you're going to need that money soon? Like, what are you thinking in maybe 10 years or 5 years?
Or no, I'm thinking when I'm in my 80s.
And how old are you now?
I'm 55.
Okay. Yeah, so
and unless something happens with the federal government, I'm going to get retirement money from them until I'm dead.
Right.
No, God forbid. I don't want anything to happen to our government.
Right. So, yeah, I would stick to, Cheryl, a growth model for, I'm thinking about that combined IRA. I would continue to think about a growth model. But let me ask you this. When the Lord calls you home, do you have heirs that you're going to leave all this to?
I have three stepchildren that I'll leave some of it to, and the rest of it I'm planning on leaving it to the church.
Okay. So I would ask you, because you have so much qualified money, you know, when you are at a place, if you haven't already done a will, and you're going to leave, and you can only think in today's dollars. Don't try to think about what you might have when you're 90. Think about today's dollars. And in today's dollars, you're going to think, well, I want to leave, I'm making stuff up here, but I want to leave 30% of all that I have to my stepchildren. So I'm going to leave 30% to my stepchildren. And I'm going to leave 70% to the church. I would start now to make on this IRA account, when you roll it all together, make sure you fill out the beneficiary part of that says that I want, again, making numbers up, I don't know what the number is, but 70% to go to the church. Now, the reason I asked you that was because I'm thinking about all this money being qualified money and IRA money. And I'm going to go to... Welcome back. Financial Issues. I'm Dan Celia, 844-707-5533. I was talking to Cheryl from Virginia, thinking about arranging her accounts. And so, Cheryl, I'm not... When you were telling me all this, I was thinking, well, do you have heirs? And when you said that the majority of your money, or it sounds like the majority of your money, is going to go to your church, I don't have any real concerns any longer, because what I didn't want to happen, since you have so much in that qualified money, you know, IRAs, I didn't want to get taxed to death to heirs, you know, so I think you're okay with that. But it's important that you note on the beneficiary form of the IRA account some sort of percentage that is going to go to your church. And you should do that now in case something were to happen. You wouldn't want all that money to get clobbered in taxes. It goes to the church tax-free. There won't be any taxes on it. And that's the beauty of doing that with your IRA accounts.
Okay. And I have another question.
Okay.
So my husband's still working.
Uh-huh.
So it's my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, that I can contribute to a Roth IRA because he's still working.
Yes, you can get a spousal IRA account.
Okay.
Now, I wouldn't recommend that, Cheryl.
Oh,
and I'll tell you why. Only because I think with any discretionary income that you guys have that you can, you know, save, I would do it in an investment account. You have so much in qualified money. The kind of money that is regulated, we'll say, by the government. And the majority of your wealth is in that qualified money, I think it would be wise for you to be investing in just a, and you can do this at Fidelity too, just so, you know, you learn how that platform works, so you don't have to think about another company. But just open just a straight investment account that is not qualified. The downside to that is, Cheryl, that if you buy a stock and that stock goes up, if you put $10,000 in a stock and the stock goes up to $20,000 and you sell it, you will have to pay capital gains tax on that $10,000 that you've made. But the capital gains tax you have to pay, it still would be less than the income tax that you would have to pay if you had it in an IRA account. Okay. Now, in a Roth IRA, you don't have to pay tax, it grows tax-free, but you're limited as to how much you can put in there anyway, and I would rather you not have any limitations and have the flexibility of not worrying about a particular law that could change based on what kind of government we have.
And should I look at rolling money from my traditional IRA into a Roth IRA?
I
have both.
Yeah, I think that would be good to do that. I think that would make real good sense to do it gradually. Do whatever you feel you're willing to pay on taxes, then yes. I think you shouldn't start now and have every year take a little bit out and put it over into the Roth. I think that would be wise.
And is it better to do it at the beginning of the year or the end of the year, or it doesn't matter?
It doesn't matter because it's going to be taxed that taxable year, and it really doesn't matter. I mean, I wouldn't try to time the markets either about trying to do it at a specific time. I would just do it, on a gradual basis. Every year. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so very much.
Cheryl, I thank you for your service to all of us. What a blessing. Thank you.
Yeah, and may God continue to bless you and keep you safe.
Thank you so much. I sure appreciate that. God bless.
Take care.
All right.
God bless.
844-707-5533, 844-707-5533. Financial issues. Our phone lines are open. If you want to queue up a call, you can do that. Lynn, is this a question? Yeah, on Twitter is saying, how much in liquid assets would one need in order to receive maximum benefit from your partnership investment tools? I don't know. Nobody's ever asked me that question before. I think that it's such, in the grand scheme of things, it's such a small amount. So I would look at it this way, Lynn. If you want to do this on your own and you want to be biblically responsible and you are starting to invest, even if you have no money now, like saved up for that investment, but you're going to start investing, whether it's a little, a little bit each month, or maybe you have $1,000 and you're going to start your investing with that $1,000 or whatever it is, I think that $85 is a really small price for the learning and to do things God's way, to do things God's way. I don't, I really don't think that you can kind of put a price on it from an asset standpoint. I think it's just a matter of, am I going to start investing? And when I start investing, am I going to need help? And do I want the kind of help from a biblical worldview standpoint, do I want that kind of help? And am I willing to pay $85 for it? I know people that are partners that literally have nothing, but they're getting off on the right foot. They want to learn as much as they can, and they want to do the right thing. So that's all I can say about it. I wish I could, you know. I mean, there are people that I've talked to that I've said to them, look, do this. If you're going to put $25 a month or $100 a month, whatever it is, into your IRA at Timothy, and you're using the Timothy Growth Fund, or you're using Timothy Strategic Growth, you know, which is a mix of all their funds, if you're going to do that, you don't need to partner with me. I mean, that's great. Just do that. You know you're going to be biblically responsible. You're doing that every month. You're a young person. You continue to do that as a young person for the next 20 years, you're going to be great. You're going to have more money than you ever need. You may never need to partner with a ministry. So, and I've said that a lot, but if you want to learn and you want to diversify and you want to do a lot of different things, then I think it's always going to be in your best interest to do that. Somebody on Twitter, BR, is asking me, it's a comment. I'm sorry. It's just a comment. Just saying, what is wrong with Made in America? Remember, you know, that we used to take great pride in things that were made in America and were encouraged to buy things made in America. I don't know what's wrong. There's nothing wrong with it. Nothing wrong with it from your perspective or my perspective. It's a great thing. Being made in America is what made America as great as it is and continues to be the land of opportunity and the place that people want to come to. So there's nothing wrong with it. Hopefully we'll get back to that. Asking me my outlook on oil pipelines. My outlook on oil pipeline is very, very good. I think that it is one of the key components that is going to continue to grow. It has been a growth engine for the economy this year and last year, and it will continue to be. If there's a presidential change in 2020, then all of that is gone because if there's a change, we're going to be back to an EPA and an administration that wants to keep all the oil in the ground, and we won't need pipelines because there won't be any movement of oil. There will be the removal of the combustion engine as one of the things they want to do. See, we have a whole bunch of politicians, and I know this sounds crazy, but if I don't believe this, then I've got to call them just moronic behavior. So with tongue in cheek, I say that we have a group of politicians, young and old, that believe, they've got to believe this surely, that there is some sort of invisible wall around America. And that invisible wall goes all the way up to the ozone level. And what we do in America is going to clean our air. They don't understand, bless their heart, they don't understand that the globe that we live on rotates. And they don't understand the direction in which it rotates. And they don't understand that China is polluting California. They don't understand that. They don't understand that the wind blows in certain directions. They think that India...
The opinions and recommendations expressed by Dan are his own and do not necessarily represent the opinions of this station or any of the show's sponsors.
Welcome back. Financial Issues, 844-707-5533. 844-707-5533. You can queue your call up if you want, 844-707-5533. Let me go to Matt. Matt's calling us from Missouri. Hey, Matt.
Hi, how are you doing this morning?
Good.
Question. Over the years, I've had a couple of 401ks and a couple of different jobs, and for one reason or another, to keep things going strong and keep the house afloat and bills paid and all that, when I changed jobs, I cashed them in and did what I had to do to make things work.
Right.
And found myself in 2011 with a different company and small little trucking company, a couple of drivers is all. There's no insurance, no 401k, none of that. And I'm getting to be 58 this year, and I got about, I figure, 15 to 17 years left of driving, and I want to get out of it. And I'm putting away what I can every week in savings, and, you know, we got a small amount of money in checking. My wife works, too, but I'd still, in the back of my mind, I'm wanting to get back into some kind of a plan where I could be putting some money away where it's making me a little bit of money. So I wanted to start another 401k or something that would help me accumulate, and I know it's a little late in life to start now, but something so that when I retire, I got a few thousand here and there in the bank.
Sure.
So where should I go with that?
Well, I would probably look at a Roth IRA account and start, you know, I would set it up. Matt, do you get paid like automatic deposit in your checking account? Okay.
No, I just get a check every week and I take it to my bank.
I would set it up. If you get paid every week, I would set it up so that every week automatically, you know, $25, $100, whatever it is you can do, is coming out automatically. Like it's almost like it's coming out of your pay and into this Roth IRA account. I keep building that up. Now, I don't know what kind of risk tolerance you have. If you don't have a lot of risk tolerance, in other words, you know, to get in the markets, then I would just, you know, do something at a bank or a credit union that is going to continue to pay you an okay interest, you know, maybe get 2% or something that right now until interest rates go up a little bit higher and constantly be putting money into that. And I think, you know, that might make the most sense for you if you don't have a lot of risk. Aside from that, if you have some risk, then I would look at going into an investment account somewhere where you're actually accumulating some money in some investments. And I think that might make more sense. If you're going to do that, you might want to open up a Roth IRA at Timothy account, Timothy, and have them take that money out, and it's going to go in to you know, various different funds that you're set up. And I can help you set some of that up, but I, you know, before, you know, as once you get that initial deposit and you're having some money coming out of every pay, or once a month if you want, but, you know, then we can start thinking about which funds to go into. I think in the long run, over the next 17 years, that's going to be better for you. You just got to be able to live with the, you know, the ups and downs a little bit in the market.
Yeah, I understand that. I was just thinking of, like, a percentage of my gross every week, maybe 5% of my gross every week, and taking that amount and putting that into that fund.
Yeah, I mean, I think that'd be great. Now, you're limited to $7,000 a year. So if you're making, you know, more than, you know, I don't know, $35,000, is that what that is? I don't know that it might not be, you know, you can only put in 7,000. Now, what you could do is you could open one for your wife too there. And so then you could do 14,000 and that would probably cover you. So that might be a better way to go, just so you can get a little bit more in. If you can't do it now, you might have some years where you will be doing it. So just think about that. That's just an IRS rule that if you're if you're over 50, you can put $7,000 into a IRA.
Okay. All righty. Well, I appreciate your input then. That's what I needed to know.
Yep. All right. Thank you, Matt. Glad you called.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks. And folks, remember, it's not too late. It's never too late. I mean, just keep getting, it's never too late to save. It's never too late to put some money aside. Especially, you know, like Matt's got 17 years. He thinks he's going to work another 17 years, I think he said. You have that much time. You know, it's not too late. And you should be, don't allow two things to be discouraging to you. One is, oh, I don't have enough time, so no sense of doing anything. Or I can only do a little bit of money, so there's no sense. I might as well not do anything. That's the stumbling block that everybody trips over that is, you know, getting started. It's always the way. It's one of those things that discourage people from doing anything. Don't let that happen, because that is not good. You don't need to let that happen. You'll be fine. 844-707-5533. Let me go to Russell. Russell's calling us from Florida. Hey, Russell.
Hey, Dan. I've talked to you before. I'm a partner. Hey, I have a friend. He passed away, and he left his wife a term life insurance. And she's still working, 62. She plans on working till full four more years. And she has a 403B, the amount of which I'm not. She hasn't gotten back to me, but she puts in about $6,000 a year into that. Now, can she open up? How much is the maximum amount? Can you do both?
You can do both. You can do both, and in her case, she can do both because she's not maxing out her 403B. So she still has room, and yes, she could open a Roth IRA account.
Okay, so what would be the max?
She'd have to ask human resources.
Okay.
So they'll tell her, because it depends on the wages and stuff, how much she earns.
Okay, so if she's doing the max there, does that mean she can still do the max, the $7,000 in the...
No. No, she can't. Oh, so but she's not doing anywhere near the max if she's putting $6,000 a year in.
Okay, so the 403B is above and beyond the $7,000, right?
Yes.
I mean, you would put in an IRA.
Yes, that's
okay.
Right. Yep.
Okay, so we got to find out how much she's actually put in, and she can put the rest in a Roth, because she's still working.
Correct.
And she has this life insurance policy.
Yep.
And I got, you know, I'm sure there's some great insurance people out there, but, you know, when they won't give you the check, they got to give it to you in person because it's a company policy.
Yeah.
You know the sales pitch is coming in.
It's coming.
You know, these are grieving people, and they're coming to your house.
She can't let it happen. I would call the number on the policy and say, this may be an internal policy. It's not the law. Send me the check. And that's what she should do. And I would tell, I always tell people, don't do anything for 12 months, except leave it in the insurance company. I would leave the money there. I would get it over and put it in a CD, if nothing else, but I wouldn't let it sit there, but I wouldn't make any major decisions. They're only coming over because it's going to sound really good to her. They're just going to sell her another annuity.
Yeah, we already... As soon as, you know, my wife went up there to be with her, and that was the first thing. Says, look, don't do anything for a year. And she got the, you know, we drilled it into her, don't sign anything. And she got the check and put it in her savings account.
Good.
So
good. Hey, you know, at the end of the last hour, we left that hour with a great clip from Billy Graham. And right now, we're gonna go to the end of this hour. I'm going to leave you with a wonderful clip. It's an Easter message from Ronald Reagan. Listen to this.
My fellow Americans, this week, as American families draw together in worship, we join with millions upon millions of others around the world, also celebrating the traditions of their faiths. During these days at least, regardless of nationality, region, or race, we are united by faith in God, and the barriers between us seem less significant. As Paul explained in his epistle to the Ephesians, He came and preached peace to you who were far away and peace to those who were near. So then you are no longer strangers and aliens, but you are fellow citizens of God's household. This is a time of hope and peace when our spirits are filled and lifted. It's a time when we give thanks for our blessings, chief among them freedom, peace, and the promise of eternal life. As we look around us today, we still find human pain and suffering, but we also see it answered with individual courage and spirit strengthened by faith. We want peace. We want to take care of one another. We want to be able to get along with one another. We want to be able to share. We want freedom and justice. We want to be friends. We want no wars. We want to be able to talk to one another. We want to be able to travel around the world without fear. Nearly 2,000 years after the coming of the Prince of Peace, such simple wishes may still seem far from fulfillment, but we can achieve them. We must never stop trying. The generation of Americans now growing up in schools across our country can make sure the United States will remain a force for good, the champion of peace and freedom, as their parents and grandparents before them have done. And if we live our lives and dedicate our country to truth, to love, and to God, we will be a part of something much stronger and much more enduring than any negative power here on Earth. That's why this weekend is a celebration.